Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction, haunted entertainment community. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we return once again on this holiday weekend here in the United States.
Right.
I do not say Happy Memorial Day for obvious reasons. It's a day of remembrance. But I do hope that you are enjoying your holiday weekend and celebrating it in ways appropriate to you.
Yeah.
That is all I'm going to say there. But yes, we are coming this week with the second of a very not surprising two-part series that we've been planning on doing, what we started doing last week. Last week, we did a whole hour about the first room in Haunts, so it only makes sense to come back around and try to do the same thing again for the last room. But we have a little bit less to say about the last room, honestly, as we went through it. We'll get into why in a minute.
Yeah.
But look, we got some really awesome feedback on the last episode, and we really appreciate it. Definitely keep it coming.
Yeah.
We are at hauntweekly.com, hauntweekly on Twitter, hauntweekly on Facebook, tinyurl.com/hauntweekly is the YouTube channel. We're also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, basically anywhere your podcasts live, we are there. But anyways, it is time to...
We have invaded.
We have invaded everything. We're taking over. No, we're not.
No.
That's the big scary show's job.
Yes.
It's their world. We just live in it. But, all right, first things first, it's an even number of weeks. That means I get to kick off the conference reminders. So I will do so beginning right now. Okay, coming up June 7th through 9th in Schaumburg, Illinois, it's the Midwest Haunters Convention at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center Hotel, featuring tours of Dead Rising, Midnight Terror, Massacre Haunted House, Basement of the Dead, and Hell's Gate, all attractions we have seen, thanks to Japes and the wonderful Lost Souls Haunted Bus Tour. I will vouch for each and every one of these as being great.
Yes.
You should go see these tours, is what I'm trying to say to you. And you can learn how to get on those tours and get involved in all this at MidwestHauntersConvention.com.
Okay, then June 21st through the 23rd, it's Michigan Haunt Fest at the Oaks Campground in Munith, Michigan. It features Make and Takes, a campsite decorating contest, and a pancake breakfast. Some of the proceeds benefit the Humane Society, MichiganHauntFest.weebly.com.
Now, we really haven't paid much attention to this one. I'm kind of blown by, but this sounds awesome. Just go camping and eat pancakes with haunters. What the hell? This sounds great to me.
Yeah, I can just imagine all the pranks that would be played late at night.
Oh, God. Okay, bring cap guns. Just trust me on this. They're very useful in this. Okay, after that, on July 27th in Mount Carroll, Illinois, at the Mount Carroll Bowling Center, it's Haunter Horde Gathering with a tour of Raven's Grin Inn, an auction for Scares That Care and Don't Be a Monster. They are offering free pizza with admission, and they have a bar that you can pay for your drinks and hang as you hang out. The admission is only $5. You will eat more than that in pizza.
Yeah.
Probably literally.
Yeah.
And the tour of Raven's Grin Inn is just $15. The chance to go see this amazing, one-of-a-kind, truly unique, special, wonderful haunt with a bunch of other haunters. Haunter Horde, HORDE.com. If you're in the area and you can go and you don't go, I can't help you.
No.
That's it.
Yep. You're done. All right. July 27th through the 28th, it's Texas Haunters Convention in Mesquite, Texas at the Mesquite Convention Center. It features a meet and greet and a costume ball. You can find out what else it will entail at TexasHauntersConvention.com.
All right. After that, August 3rd through the 4th in Long Beach, California, it's Midsummer Scream. Eek! At the Long Beach Convention Center, it will feature dozens of on-site haunted attractions and experiences, a Hall of Shadows Dark Zone, as well as a Screaming Room Film Festival, a fashion show, and live theatrical performances. Wow, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
MidsummerScream.org for more details.
Okay, August 6th through the 8th, it's Room Escape Conference and Tour in Nashville, Tennessee. They will be at the Music City Center, roomescapeshow.com for more info.
Yeah, we're still waiting on which room escapes they will be touring right now. We're still waiting on that. Last I checked, which was last week, actually, they hadn't posted. I didn't check this week. And finally for this week, it's CreepyCon Halloween and Horror Convention in Knoxville, Tennessee, August 23rd through the 25th at Jacob's Building. Who's Jacob? Why does he have a building? I don't know. Mysteries to be unraveled at CreepyConKnoxville.com. They're also going to have workshops, exhibitors, and a zombie beauty contest. You know, I only like zombies for their brains, though.
Tish.
Yes, I know. But anyways, yes, once again, that's CreepyConKnoxville.com. Hope some of you are able to make your way out to that one. It looks like a grand old time. So, yeah, last week we talked about the first room in a haunt and the very important role it plays.
Yeah.
And I apologize for the continuing cough, but as we've discussed on some of the Facebook posts, it's not exactly something I can do much about, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yes, we've heard about how important the first room it is, and it is. It controls the throughput, it sets the tone for the rest of the haunt, and it's a chance to really control how people go through the rest of the haunt, to do your spacing and so forth.
Right.
It's a very, very important room. But we've also heard the same thing about the last room, and how it is also the most important room in the haunt.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some reasons for that.
Yeah.
It's the easiest to remember, and if you're standing in the queue line, there's a good chance that's the room you see everyone leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because of that, it may actually set the tone for the haunt in a bigger way than the first room. Because in a weird way, the last room can be both the first room and the last room they see. Because they see the aftermath as people come out of it
right.
before they enter the haunt. And then they see the room at the very end.
Yeah, that's true.
So it can be both the first and the last thing they experience at your haunt.
And if they know about how long it's going to be, they can have that anticipation building up.
Yes, indeed. And that's one of the things we like to do when we're standing in queue lines, because we're horrible people and do stuff like this, is we time when we find someone distinctive in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's wearing an obnoxious shirt or something like that. And we can just like spot easily. And we watch them when they go in. And time them from when they come out to see how long their experience was so we can compare it to our own.
Yeah.
Because we know we're kind of fast-ish sometimes.
I don't know. I think we go slower.
That's just it, though. I say that, but then it seems like we're always running into the group. It's weird, okay?
Yeah.
I don't think we have a normal cadence.
That might be true.
I don't know which way it's abnormal or abnormal.
Yes.
But we do seem to have an abnormal cadence. I don't know to what end. This is also the first room people will talk about when they leave.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, as they are leaving the haunt, the first words people will say to each other is, "Did you see that blank that was just behind us?"
Yeah.
Whatever it was. And it's the one, like I said, they will likely remember the longest because it does leave that lasting impression. There's not new memories being made feet away. No, when that's the end of the alert phase, basically. And so their brains are switching back to normal mode. And so they might be able to hang on to that memory a little better.
Yeah.
And also, it has, I think, the very important job of tying together the haunt. Because that's one of the things we're going to talk about as we go through, is about subverting expectations with that last room.
Right.
And how important that can be. But at the same time, if your last room is way too off the goddamn wall,
mm-hmm.
it can hurt you.
Yeah.
It can hurt you more than help you. So you got to find a balance there. But yeah, and there are reasons to not put too much pressure on yourself with that final room. I mean, think about it. Those of us who've been to lots of haunts, how many final rooms can you really remember?
Yeah, I've been trying to think of any, and I can't.
I can remember, only because I've been there so many years, the final hallway at the mortuary that's forever unchanged.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that there's possibility to do
I don't think there's even a possibility.
Hallway.
I don't think they can do anything different.
Yeah.
Classic House of Shock with a barrel wall, even though that wasn't really the last room. That was more of an escape sequence, which we're going to talk more about.
Yeah, but it's the thing that people remembered for a long
time.
Yeah,
and it shouldn't be, for reasons we're going to get into.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, other than like haunts we went to year after year after year after year after year after year,
mm-hmm.
I'm really struggling to remember a lot of last rooms. I remember a lot of big moments in haunts.
Yeah.
You know, going back to the Atlanta trip, I remember Freaks of Fear, the birds swooping down on us.
Right, exactly.
That was a huge climax moment. I remember, we're going to talk about it, I'm sure we're going to talk about it again, Evil Intentions with the big cathedral sequence that was right at the midpoint and blew our mind.
Yeah.
Things like that that's what stands out. So yeah, it's an important role, but I don't know if really being the star of the haunt is that job.
Right.
It may be a situation where this is a more functional role, both in terms of making sure your throughput is maintained, but also setting up the people in the queue line with better expectations.
Yeah, and I agree with that because, you know, there are, whenever I think of haunts and what I associate with each one, mm-hmm. it's usually not the first or the last room.
Yeah.
Now, it could be an opening sequence if it's a scene.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen that done anywhere else. But lots of times it's just what made that haunt unique. And
yeah.
And it's out of order, you know.
Well, and for me personally, what's most memorable, I find, mm-hmm. is when we go into from a fairly normal sequence and transition into one that is much grander in scale and much more open or does something different with the vertical space.
Yeah.
Like Nightmare at 3008. I remember the guy in the ceiling with the drop panel beside that, the
right.
tactics of that, because that was something we hadn't seen in that haunt. They'd been doing a bunch of the light touching stuff and all that and kind of gotten a little old by that point.
Yeah.
So then they introduced this amazing tactical scare that played around the vertical space and it was awesome.
Yeah.
It threw me. It genuinely right. threw me. Waterloo, I remember the three drop panel sequence. That was just fucking hilarious to watch Ellie.
Yeah, it was.
I've never seen Ellie get got quite like that before or since.
No.
So yeah, the moments like that where I see amazing tactics and I see things that make me go, wow,
yeah,
that was beautiful. That's what I remember. And I think that's what most people really remember too.
Mm-hmm.
Like similarly, Rise, the two giant drop panel sequence where each side of the hallway drops.
Right.
The first time we saw that,
yeah,
it boggled our mind.
Yeah, and they're the only ones that still do that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful scare. I don't know why others haven't tried to take that and make it their own. So yeah, I think you shouldn't ignore the last room to bring us back on target. Stay on target. Stay on target. But it doesn't have, you know, it's not necessarily the most important room to you. It's going to be how you organize your haunt.
Right.
And the goal, hopefully, the last room is to leave people with saying, wow. And if the layout is able to do it, to send them so that the crowd coming in gets hyped.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing. And the story I always tell people is from Splash Mountain in Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
And this sounds like such a weird thing to discuss on a podcast about haunted attractions. But just hang with me for a minute. If you've never done Splash Mountain before, it's basically that log flume ride with a big, it was famous when it opened for that big, huge drop. And the drop is amazing because not only is it a big drop, but they use misters to hide the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you genuinely don't know how deep you're going.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really cool. But the whole thing tells the story of Brer Bear and Brer Rabbit, which, okay, we're not getting into that.
Yeah.
We're going to sidestep that one because we're not equipped to handle that conversation. But anyways, you go through, they start with the animatronics, and then they have the drop, and then there's more of those goddamn animatronics telling the story. And so when me and my dad went to get on the ride, we're looking at the riders coming off, and they're just looking confused.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking like they're trying to solve a calculus problem or something. They're staring off into the ether going, the hell?
Yeah.
Like quantum entanglement just got proposed to them or something.
Mm-hmm.
And like, shouldn't they be mortified? Shouldn't they be like, ah, you know? No, they were all, huh? Yeah, because you get in there 30 seconds of that after the big drop. It really set us up when we got on the ride in a very weird place. I don't know if it was necessarily the wrong place, but very weird.
Mm-hmm.
So something to think about. So anyways, I tried to cobble together the approaches, like we did with the first room in the last podcast, the approaches we've seen to the last room, and go through them one at a time.
Yeah.
To that end, approach one, the chainsaw room.
Yeah.
As seen, I would say probably in more than half the haunts we go to.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't even want to name and shame because it's so many.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to get this one out of the way because we've all seen it at least 100 times over. And here's the thing, in terms of what a last room is supposed to do, by what we just talked about, it is kind of perfect.
Yeah.
Your goal is to get people out of the room, hopefully get them to put on a spectacle for the queue line, and basically keep that throughput moving. You can't have chokes at the end of the haunt, because that's like, you know, well, basically it's like putting a cork in your butthole. You know, you know what I mean? Then you can't, then eventually everything backs up.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm great with my analogies. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is, it's stupid easy to do. I have mad respect for chainsaw people and the amount of energy it takes. Believe
right.
me, I've done it over brief intervals. I have a mad respect for the energy, but at the end of the day, in terms of like laying out the scare and thinking about the tactics of it, it's basically guy, chainsaw, from behind, done. There's your tactics.
Yeah.
And it works. It doesn't need much decoration. It doesn't need much selling. I mean, like I said, the chainsaw hallway at the mortuary is literally just a black hallway.
Yeah. And there are customers who I've heard say that that's their favorite part, being chased with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
I think they're weird, you know, but,
And one of the things that you and I have to keep in mind is, turns out not everyone goes to as many haunted houses as we do.
No.
Turns out we're a little abnormal in that we go to this many every year. We have a podcast about it. We have our own. We're a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I've been told by others. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and you're right. People do expect it. But it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be at the end.
Right.
But the thing is, it is cheap, fast, effective. And once you've got a good chainsaw guy who can really wield it properly, I am not that dude, for the record.
Yeah.
That's why I have such respect for them. It can be a very powerful scare, especially for the majority of people. But it seems to me it's getting less and less effective as people have come to expect it.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like the chant of encore than it is a scare into itself now. Yeah, and that's just it. It's kind of the perfect ending, except almost literally everyone does it. And the thing is, the best use I ever saw of a chainsaw room, I think we're going back to Evil Intentions now, in the Chicago area. I think they were in Elgin. Because they had their chainsaws at the midpoint.
Yeah.
We come around the corner, I hear, you know, I hear that. I'm like, okay, it was a little short, but it was a good haunt. I'm happy with the ending. I'm happy with it ending here. We're going to go and do the after party and all that stuff. It's going to be fine. And then, round the chainsaw, we move forward. And then we turn a corner, and boom, it's only the halfway point of the haunt.
Yeah.
That fucked with my expectations hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that I'd been through 100 other haunts, or at least guessed that I'd been through at least a few other haunts,
mm-hmm.
where that was always the ending. It wasn't the chasing me into the next section.
No.
That worked so beautifully, and it created such an impactful memory.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and here's the thing I would like to say. This can also be extremely unsafe.
Yeah.
This particular room. We warn people not to run in haunts. It's like rule one, damn near every haunt, is no running. And then we pull out chainsaws and force them to run.
Yeah.
Have you noticed a little hypocrisy here? I'm just saying.
We might be dicks.
And yes, some haunts aren't built for the scared. Not to be confused with Evil Intentions. Evil Visions in Monroe, Louisiana, had a chainsaw at the end. But their exit, at least at the time, it may have changed. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if they're still open, honestly. I haven't really checked into them.
No, I haven't.
Their exit the year we went was a fire exit on the side of the warehouse.
Yeah.
And so you hit, and you were on basically like a docking ramp. And if you, so like you go out the door, you have about 5 feet of clearance, and then there's a rail. And if you go over that rail, you are in traffic on a busy street in downtown Monroe.
Yeah, and it was a very short ramp.
It was a very short ramp. And in fact, we didn't have that problem. So like I said, I'm going to die because I'm going to assume a chainsaw is gimmicked and it not be. That is my impending death. Because I am that kind of stupid now, thanks to haunting.
No.
But the group behind us nearly hockey checked our ass over that rail when they came out.
Yeah, and they did run into the street.
Yeah, and they did run out into the street. Luckily, the stoplights were such that they did not have a problem.
Right. And it does look like they are still open.
Okay, cool. I'm happy to hear they were open. Yeah. They had a lot of creative ideas. I just think their exit was not appropriate.
Yeah, it's been a few years since we've been there.
Yeah, well, Monroe's a hell of a haul for us.
It is.
Louisiana's weird. Even though it's not that far, like as the crow flies, it's nearly impossible to get to because all the interstates try to take you towards Shreveport side of the state. Mm-hmm. And getting to Monroe, you're going to have to go up some country roads and some bullshittery, even from your parents who are north of Alexandria. It took 2 hours to get there.
Yeah.
It's nuts. So, yeah. But, yeah, we talked about in episode 52 about a haunt visitor who was fleeing from a chainsaw guy. This was in a rural area, North Carolina haunt. Mm-hmm. And then he ran into traffic and got hit by an SUV and severely injured.
Yeah, I don't remember if he was severely injured or if he died.
I reread the article. It said severely injured.
Okay.
I went back to the article. Then they were raising funds for his medical care.
Gotcha.
In fact, they donated like half the rest of the revenue from the haunt to him.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. Yeah, the chainsaw guy was his friend. He knew him and he was messing with him. But he also stopped chasing them way before traffic.
Yeah.
And even yelled at him to stop and took off his mask and did everything he could to stop the guy.
Yeah.
And couldn't do it.
Right.
You can't predict how, where, or how far, or where, or, you know, how fast the people are going to run, especially when they're at the exit, especially when you're pushing them into the outside world.
Yeah. Well, you can't really predict customers' response at all to a scare.
Yeah.
Because
we've
seen some crazy shit.
Every haunter, I think, has seen some crazy shit. But yeah, and that's really impacted our haunt design broadly, not just our exit. But our haunt design broadly, in that one of the things we try to do is we make it so that it is physically impossible for them to do anything other than what we want.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And everything is body checked.
Yes. Yeah, basically, I've got to go full ECW on the walls and everything every year.
Yeah. And that's just one of the things you have to teach people.
Yeah. Exactly. But here's the thing with chainsaws. I mean, we rag on them pretty regularly on this podcast because we've seen it so much and we do feel it's overdone. Mm-hmm. But I also understand that people do expect it and people want it. We have a no chainsaw rule in our haunt, and we've maintained that partly because we think it's overdone, but also because we don't really have a place for it.
Yeah, we don't have a place and we don't have a need. People are already running out of our last room.
Yeah, so
usually
we don't really need it. We don't have a place for it. We couldn't do it safely if we wanted to.
Yeah.
If you feel like you need to have it, I understand, but consider moving this to a false finish.
Yeah.
I really think it works well as a false finish because that's messing with the expectations the customers have coming in. And it's messing with it in a positive way because they think something's over and you're giving them more.
Yeah.
You don't want to mess with expectations like giving them less than what they thought they were getting. You're giving them more. That's a good way to mess with expectations.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yeah, approach two. The maze. Yeah, we're starting off with the ones we really don't like, aren't we?
Yeah.
Which asshole wrote these notes? Oh, wait, it was me.
Yeah, and we actually covered how much we don't like mazes
in a full
episode 23.
Yeah, so if you want a full hour of us bitching about mazes and haunts,
we got you
covered. mazes. We're not going to spend a full hour on it this time because here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I realize this. The maze has gone out of fashion in haunted houses since sometime in the 90s. And it's really funny because the very first haunt you and I worked at together had a maze.
It did.
Had a maze at the end. It was the last thing. And I remember the big advertisement. This haunt can take anywhere between 18 minutes and 3 hours. But how long it takes to get out the damn maze? I'm like, motherfucker, if I spend two hours and 45 minutes in your fucking maze, I'm going to get pissed. That's pretty much kidnapping at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
That's borderline kidnapping. No, it's not borderline. It just is kidnapping at that point. But yeah, it's gone out of fashion since the 90s. And the reason it became popular was because, especially when you were dealing with charity haunts and like smaller haunts that maybe didn't have the budget,
mm-hmm.
it was seen as an easy, cheap way to add a lot of walkthrough time and to give value.
Right.
Basically, it's trivial to build. It's a bunch of right angles without a lot of decoration. In fact, usually they're blackout mazes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need many actors, just need a couple to roam the space. And you can confuse people and disorient people and keep them longer and make it feel like your haunt that maybe should have been a 10-minute haunt is now a 25-minute haunt.
Right.
You know, it made it really popular. But here's the thing. I think it went out of vogue because commercial haunts realized that these nuke throughput.
Yeah.
This is just dropping a nuclear warhead on your throughput and just...
Yeah. Well, not only does it do that to throughput, but lots of them... you have to get special clearances from fire marshals yeah. for them. Because the exits are intentionally hidden.
Well, and they may not even be legal in most areas now.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's the big difference between a labyrinth and a maze.
Right.
Yeah, Pan's Labyrinth shouldn't have had any dead ends.
Right, exactly.
Just saying. Basically, because a labyrinth is a winding path. It's, you know, if you look at like a maze with a start and an exit, the labyrinth will take the windingest route possible to get there.
Yeah.
But there's only one path. You yeah. never get lost. As long as you keep moving forward and don't get turned around, you're going toward the exit. A maze, by its very nature, has dead ends where you hit walls and have to turn around.
Right.
And one of those is much easier to contend with in a fire or other emergency than the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is. And also, we've seen the mazes that will hide the doors to look like walls so that you can't actually find the exit.
Yeah, and this was like with Waterloo Sportsman Club in Waterloo, Illinois. It's southeast Illinois. We went there not knowing what to expect from their haunted attraction. It's their annual fundraiser.
Yeah.
We didn't know what to expect. It was an amazing haunted trail.
Yeah.
Just straight up amazing. And they killed it for us by ending with a goddamn maze.
Yep.
And one of those hidden door mazes, too.
Exactly.
Pissed me off royally. I still love it. I still want to go back. Now that I know you are allowed to skip the maze,
yeah.
I'll just simply skip the maze.
Exactly.
But, yeah. And there's the other problem with mazes is that they are just inherently unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
There's literally blind corners, and because of dead ends, there's no single flow of traffic.
Right.
Usually in a haunted house, every customer, everybody should be moving the same path.
Mm-hmm.
With a maze, they have to bypass each other going opposite ways.
Yeah, you've been injured multiple times by running into people.
Yeah, the last time I actually needed medical attention at a haunted house was at Lafitte Fire Department's maze.
Yeah.
When, I can't remember if it was a customer or one of the actors, but someone came around a blind corner and just headbutted me.
Yeah.
Perfect noggin-to-noggin contact. We both went down pretty hard from it.
Yeah, you both had cuts.
We both had cuts right above our eyes. We basically hit like right at 90-degree angles to each other.
Yeah.
Apparently we were the exact same height.
Apparently.
Who knew? And like I said, they're also frustrating. I mean, yeah, people are scared in mazes, mm-hmm. but the fear factor wears off after a period of time.
Yeah.
And then people are stuck trying to figure out how to get out of the maze. And a maze can then feel kind of cheap, especially if you do tricks like hide the doors or things mm-hmm. like that, where there's no... It's unfair.
Yeah.
It's like an escape room with unsolvable puzzles at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, don't do that.
And that's just it. If you want to provide that puzzle-solving experience, great. That's awesome. That's why haunts are getting into the escape room business.
Mm-hmm.
Make a kick-ass escape room.
Yeah.
It will do more... to scratch that puzzle-solving itch than a maze ever would.
Yeah, no kidding.
And it's a second source of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Money!
We like money.
And the other thing is, mazes just generally aren't memorable.
No. I've never seen one that wasn't just black walls.
Yeah, or a whiteout maze. It was either extreme yeah. black or extreme white. It's one or the other.
Yeah, we did do a couple of whiteout
There were a couple
white
of whiteout mazes in Atlanta. Yeah. For some reason, Atlanta seemed hot and heavy for whiteout mazes. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah.
To each their own. Yeah, like I said, and like we pointed out, it may not even be legal. The issue of maze with the fire marshals is it's going to cause heartburn. I wouldn't recommend it. It's not worth getting any special exemptions you need.
Yeah.
And it just seems like a great way to end the haunt on a boring, frustrating note.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's the thing. If you want to disorient people, use your layout.
Mm-hmm.
You can disorient people. I've found people are pretty shitty at maintaining the orientation after just three turns.
Yeah, they are.
So we always put three turns right at the beginning of the haunt.
Yeah.
And people have no fucking clue where they're going.
Yeah. And they're always surprised at how much we do in our little space.
My favorite comment we get every year is when people reach that backside and like, okay, we're almost done. They come around, there's two more rooms coming. And
yeah.
Like, it's still going?
Yeah.
There's more?
Exactly.
All right, approach three. Let's get some approach we definitely do like, which is a climactic scene.
Yes.
The best example I can think of this was actually House of Shock. During its House of Shock years, they tended to end, a lot of those years at least, with a sacrifice sequence.
Well, and see, so the sacrifice sequence to me in my brain is like at the 3/4 mark.
They kept adding stuff after it as time went on.
Yeah, because then you had to go through the walkway past the dragon and through the coffin. Yeah.
Well, I consider all that kind of part of the dragon and the sacrifice scene to me was part of the same room, same sequence. Because that really, you didn't leave one area and go into another in my book.
Okay.
It was all part of the same weird little cave bit.
Yeah, you and I have different ideas of what a room is.
And that's fine. That's fine.
but yeah, it was.
I'm thinking sequence here more than actual room here because early on, when we first started going, like 2002, 2003, it was like sacrifice sequence, dragon, pretty much outside.
Yeah.
And then they added, initially it was a chainsaw maze after that, which didn't go good. Then they moved it into the interior of it. And then they then Katrina happened, and then they had to redo everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, and they kept that sequence, but would then add things after it, which weren't always as memorable or as good.
No.
That was a really good end pop, and especially since it ended with like the characters from the stage show.
Right, exactly.
That was the bookend.
Yeah.
They began it with a stage show. They ended it with kind of a stage show thing.
Yeah.
It's bookend, it's beautiful, send me out the fucking door, we're done.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, there's random crap still.
Yeah, there's a chainsaw maze to go through.
There's the falling barrels gag, which, while I did love the falling barrels gag,
yeah,
it's like, why is that here?
Yeah, because it didn't match anything anywhere else in the haunt.
No.
It was a beautiful setup.
Oh, God, it was one of my favorite pneumatic setups of all time.
Exactly. Everybody, like, loved it.
It's just like, that would have been so much more impactful in, like, the industrial sequences in the middle.
Yeah.
I think. Anyways, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong. But this idea of doing a climactic scene makes sense to me, because that way you can start with an opening room, do some interactivity, do some backstory in, and then crescendo the haunt up to this final sequence.
Yeah.
And, you know what? One haunt that did this really, really well, you can take a tour of upcoming in Midwest. It was Massacre Haunted House did it.
Okay.
They did the one where it starts with the kid's name.
Willow.
Willow, yeah, Willow, which we know that is James' daughter's name.
Yeah.
And they started with whispering it in small scenes, and the scenes got more and more grand. They crescendoed to the final sequence.
Right.
It worked very well. Now, once again, they had an escape thing afterward.
Right.
But I think that one did actually involve a chainsaw.
Yeah, well, and the thing is that they're... I'm just trying to think, a lot of places that do the escape things, like 13th Gate has an escape thing too, and a cool down hallway.
Yeah.
Because if you ran out of there, you would run right into traffic.
Yeah.
So some people, places you have to have the layout where there's a cool down at the end.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree. And, you know, Massacre did a really, really good job with that cool down section. Still encouraging people to move forward, but not trying to overscare.
Yeah.
Honestly, I like this approach from a storytelling standpoint. It just makes sense to me.
Yeah.
This is probably my favorite way to look at it in general, but it's not right for every haunt.
Yeah.
As we're getting into. Okay, approach.
And I think that's what we're going to be working up to this year.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be ending on a pretty big scene.
Yeah.
For us to pull off.
Yeah.
So, if you're coming to HauntCon, let us know, because we'll be doing our little tour.
Yeah, a little tour and drinking afterward.
Yep.
Okay, approach number four is just another room. As with the first room, make it a good room, make it a solid room, make it something that has a good scare in it, but make it an ordinary one. And this idea to me seems like a weaker one. Like making your first room an ordinary room makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because that's setting the expectations. Mm-hmm. With the last room, this is your chance to play with those expectations.
Yeah.
What expectations have you created with what you've done up to this point? How can you, you know, muck with it in the last room and throw people off?
Yeah.
And because that's the real advantage, the real fun of the last room, or the last two rooms maybe, is like I said, you spent all this on getting people used to things.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can fuck with it.
Yeah.
And you should. It's a chance to play up on those expectations. So yeah, it makes sense to do something different in the last room, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a big special climax. It doesn't have to be anything like that.
No.
It can just be something a little different. That being said, if you do have just like a regular room at the end, it can feel a little incomplete. It can feel like, oh, it's over.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, it doesn't get that little palate cleanser.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're waiting for the big climactic ending.
That's... Yeah, for us, Terror on the Coast kind of had that happen, where it ended and we were like, oh, it's that's it. Didn't really have a finish to me.
Yeah, and then it was a long walk back to the car.
Yeah, I was assuming we were going to go to trail haunt mode, but that didn't happen either.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. But yeah, so anyways, I think something that ties up the plot, but maybe isn't the climatic scene, something that still says this is the end,
mm-hmm.
Can be fine. It doesn't have to necessarily be a giant climax. I think it's cooler if it is, if you have the space and the ability.
Right.
But the main thing is, have a room, make it good, make the scare solid, and have it tie together the story.
Yeah.
Okay, approach 5, the real false ending. Now, we've seen this one pulled off successfully multiple times. Let people think the haunt is over, give them a chance to let their guard down, and then hit them, hit me, baby, one more time, basically.
Yeah.
This is very popular at trail haunts.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen this at, like, Freaks of Fear. We mentioned them earlier. They did it. They did it very well, I might add.
Yeah.
We've seen it at Psychopath. We've seen it elsewhere. Where the last, they'll do a sequence that makes you think it's over, and then they'll let you get away some distance, and you think, okay, so we're just walking back to the car now.
Yeah.
And then, no, you're not actually out of the haunt yet.
Yeah.
I dig that kind of false ending.
Yeah, me too.
I really do. You can't overdo it. You can't hotshot it. But, yeah, if you can pull it off and have people genuinely let down their guards, it'd be fun. Now, do bear in mind, you have the same issues with this that you do with the chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
And that it can be dangerous. People are running when maybe they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And running in places that you may not have the tightest control over. In general, courts have been very lenient on us haunts.
Mm-hmm.
When we chase people and they twist their ankle or cut themselves up or whatever.
Right.
But if courts find out that you are knowingly chasing people in the areas that you know are not safe to run to, may not be as kind.
Right, that's different.
That's different. So be thinking of that. And here's the thing, you don't have to actually do the chainsaw here. You can do various pop-out. Freaks of Fear didn't have any.
No.
There was no chainsaw at their end.
No, there was a clown guy.
Yeah, it was a clown guy that was very stalkery, and I don't know how the hell he was moving like that either. He was hauling some boogie.
Yeah.
But you can do simple pop-outs, you can do traditional direct and startle scares. You have possibilities there that don't necessarily involve the chainsaw, and or necessarily anything that might send people running too far too fast.
Yeah.
You can do something a little more muted, but they'll still be very memorable. Yeah. And but also be wary, though, that this may make the after part more memorable than the haunt itself.
Yeah.
You can be too successful here. There have been several haunts that I think had more memorable parking lots and attractions because of that. And I would include the very first haunt we worked at.
Yeah.
Because the guy with the ginormous gas-powered chainsaw was in the parking lot scaring people as they were walking away, walking to their cars. And yeah, everything else inside the haunt was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I can guarantee you we didn't get any of the same reactions that he did.
No.
So yeah, just keep that in mind. And finally, approach 6, transition to another attraction. If you have 2 separate attractions on your property, the easiest way to end one may be to simply flow into the next.
Yeah.
I've not actually seen this one done. This was an idea I've had for a while, but never actually seen done. Now, I want to throw out a note here, and I have a personal belief that if I cannot buy tickets to your attraction separately, then you do not have 2 attractions. you have one attraction with two themes.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
There is.
And mind you, this approach can work with either. It's a way to end one section by flowing into the next. But still, it can work on either type of situation. Basically, have the last room of Haunt A be pretty much the first room of Haunt B.
Yeah.
And like, whoa, everything's changed. What's going on? And it flows out into the queue line. And then you're primed and ready for Haunt B. Mm-hmm. I can see that working really, really well. And you can even make this like an infinite loop situation where the last room of Haunt B flows back into Haunt A. And so that way, even no matter which order they do it in, the last room works as the first room for the next.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
They can pick and choose their room.
Yeah.
And pick and choose their own order. So, yeah. I kind of dug that idea of the infinite loop, especially if you have can buy tickets individually. Because, like, when we go to Rise, you can buy tickets to the Asylum and to Rise separately. Mm-hmm. We typically choose to do the Asylum first.
Yeah.
Because, A, we're always excited about it, mm-hmm. and, B, the line shorter.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, is if it depends on the line. Because if the line at the house is short, then we just jump into that.
Yeah, jump in that one, you're right. Good point. But yeah, I mean, this is something I think to be really, really cool to consider, mm-hmm. In a way to sort of tie together separate attractions.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got, you know, about 10 minutes left. So which approach is the best? B. No. I don't even know which one B was. I don't think they have them lettered.
I think B was the maze.
No. Okay. C. I really should letter these. That's what I'm learning today.
Or not use letters.
Yeah. But here's the thing. You have to decide. It's like with the first room. It's a very important room. You have to decide what works best for you and your layout and what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
The first thing I would consider is, where is your exit?
Mm-hmm.
Most importantly, does it spill out toward the queue line? Now, a lot of haunts do that. House of Shock, it does. Yeah. Rise, it does. Well, Rise, it did. No. It doesn't anymore.
No, it doesn't anymore.
No, it doesn't at Rise. 13th Gate, kind of?
Not really.
I try.
Too far away.
Yeah, it's on the wrong side where the queue's facing. But yeah, New Orleans Nightmare House / House of Shock, it definitely does. And things like that. So does it flow out to where the queue line will have good visibility on it? If the queue line will see it, you probably want to exploit that.
Yeah.
Now, the weirdest ending we've ever seen in terms of not being anywhere near the fracking queue line was the Haunt in Atlanta that literally got a bus for us to go back around to the front.
Yeah. It was weird because it wasn't a long bus ride.
No, it was only like a minute.
I could have walked faster than they...
Especially since the bus took forever to get there.
That was just so confusing.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect it had something to do with ADA compliance.
Right.
But the counter to that is, have the bus available to anyone who needs it.
Yeah.
But if you're fully ambulatory and don't need it, just walk your ass back to the front.
Exactly.
It's so confusing.
The bus thinking there was something else coming.
Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, I got on the bus going, where the hell are they going to take us?
Exactly.
Where are we going?
Are there going to be characters on the bus?
Are they going to be? Yeah, is the bus driver going to do anything to scare us? And, you know, we're just going. And then it's just a shuttle to the front of the house.
Yeah.
Oh, son of a... It was paranoia, I think it was, that did that.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, man. Second question to answer, ask yourself, is it safe for people to run here? Mm-hmm. If you want a hardcore ending where people are running and fleeing your last room, you got to do the safety check first. I do love the way Rise handles their last sequence there, mm-hmm. by giving that really long, really safe, really flat cooldown hallway before they hit any dirt or anything that could be. If you manage to sprint all the way from where the chainsaw guy is to dirt at Rise, try out for track.
Yeah, we've seen it a few times.
We've seen a few people make it, but not many. Mm-hmm. Most people get winded and damn near pass out in the hallway before they have that moment.
Yeah. Well, and I think it was last season, somebody lost their sunglasses or something and were outside terrified to go back in. So we had to go and retrieve
their sunglasses. Yeah, we went and retrieved their sunglasses. And everyone's like, thanks. Uh-huh. How long of a walk is it back to the front of the house?
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the deal. Even if your queue line does spill out technically to the front of house, if it's too long, no one's going to see it.
Right.
You can't make people run forever. And the people you can make run forever, you probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
Just, you shouldn't. They're dangerous now for other reasons. Second thing to consider, what do you want to leave? What do you want people talking about when they leave? You ultimately decide what room is the most memorable. Mm-hmm. And you do that through your construction, through your composition, through your acting, through your scares.
Yeah.
You decide what room is most memorable or what will likely be the most memorable. You can't, everyone's going to have preferences, but you kind of get to say what the climax of your haunt is. It doesn't have to be the end. It can be a climax in the middle. It could be like a movie where you have a traditional three-act structure and the climax is between acts two and three.
Yeah.
You can do that. And plenty of haunts have done that. It's worked great, and I've gotten plenty of memorable scenes and haunts that way.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing to consider is throughput. I know. Shot! Jonathan mentioned throughput. Shot!
Yeah.
Here's the thing. As a general rule, haunts start out more controlled on their pacing. Mm-hmm. And open up over time. If you're going to do like interactivity, you typically do it in the first room and then let people have more and more freedom as they go through. You don't want to put all your interactivity in the last room because then people are going to get bunched up waiting to go into that room where people are held up.
Right.
This discourages groups from crashing into one another and overall helps with the flow. If you don't have Hell's Gate level of flow control, you need to consider this.
Yeah.
So you know that the last room is going to have to be something that's fairly open. And once again, chainsaws work really perfectly by this logic. Mm-hmm. It's just so overdone. But yeah, you also have to remember in the same vein, though, the groups may already be bunched up. Once again, if you don't either do what we do, which is only one group at a time, or if you don't do what Hell's Gate does and have such extreme flow control,
yeah,
that you can guarantee groups will never bunch up.
Yeah.
If you can't do one of those two things, you have to work under the presumption that at some point in the night, that last room is going to have a conga line.
Yeah.
And it's got to be able to handle it.
Yeah.
And it's even on slow nights.
A lot.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I kind of like the spectacle rooms, because it gives people a lot to see and do and think about. And it doesn't really matter how crowded it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a big open space. It's still a lot going on, a lot to think about. It's still cool. Next thing you can think about is how can you play with expectations? Look at the rest of the rooms in your haunt. What expectations have you set up? How can you mess with them in the last room?
Yeah.
There's a lot of great possibilities here. You don't want to mess with them in bad ways, obviously.
Well, no.
But you have a chance here to really mess with them in very, very good ways. Like what we talked about previously with 13th Gate accidentally setting up the expectation with the claustrophobia tunnels.
Yeah.
And then really messing with us.
Mm-hmm.
That was so amazing.
Yeah.
And five, what bits fits best with your marketing? Think about what your customers are coming to your haunt expecting. Are you advertising yourself as a haunt where you're transported to a mystical world and meet all these spooky creatures, da da da, or is this just the run for your lifestyle marketing? Which have you been doing?
Yeah.
Make sure that last room is on point with your branding and marketing. That's very important. Because like I said, that's what people are going to remember. And if you don't give them that, or it's the room that they're going to be talking about immediately after they leave, if you don't give them that in the last room, it may not matter how much you gave it to them elsewhere. Especially if the last room is so different and so obtuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I think the weirdest last room I have seen was Dead Rising.
Oh, yeah, with the Simon Says game.
Simon Says, yeah. It was interesting. I remember it.
I remember it very well, too. I remember that haunt very well. In fact, I think I remember every sequence in that haunt for different reasons because of the interactivity in it. And that's something else to think about, is interactivity helps people remember you.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that may be another point we have to do an episode on at some point.
Yeah, but, yeah.
That last sequence was weird.
It was, but no, the problem with interactivity a lot of the times is that it kills throughput.
Yes.
So there's got to be a balancing act there.
Yeah, you got to find a way to encourage interactivity without impacting throughput. And that's tough, especially when so few haunt actors are good at doing interactivity anyway.
Yeah.
It's such a rare thing to really, really find that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. But anyways, yeah, so basically find a way to subvert the expectations while giving your customers exactly what they thought they were going to get.
Yeah.
That's tough. I know that sounds completely counterintuitive, but it is possible.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, you are responsible for setting up those expectations. You should have the easiest time in the world knocking them down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's about all we have this week. It's been a pretty good run talking about the final room.
Yeah.
We do appreciate, like I said, all the feedback we got last week's episode. A lot of y'all chimed in on it. It was really interesting to hear everyone's experiences. And a lot of people that were picked to do first rooms were telling us that they were very grateful for the episode because it was an ego boost. Heard that a couple of times.
Yeah.
I love that because it should be, actually. It is an ego boost. You're being entrusted with a very important room.
Yeah.
Just like being in the last room or whatever the main sequence is. Basically, you didn't get shoved in an idiot box. You probably should be proud of yourself.
Yeah.
And even if you did, you could just be working yourself up.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, all new actors usually start in an idiot box. I've worked the idiot box, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't worry about it. If you're working the idiot box, you're still fine. Well, on that note, everyone, thank you very much for spending this near hour with us. We greatly appreciate you. Once again, look forward to your feedbacks and thoughts. And let us know, especially if you have other types of last rooms. Because we really struggled to come up with approaches on this one. We really struggled with it because, like, the last one's one we made up. We haven't actually seen it.
Yeah.
Would love to see it. I think it's a great idea, but I haven't actually seen it. So if you know any approaches to the last room that we have not seen or we didn't remember, let us know. Mm-hmm. I'm dying to hear them. And you can do that at hauntweekly.com. We have a beautiful contact form there. You can let us know. You're also Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook, tinyurl.com/Haunt Weekly's YouTube channel. You can leave comments there. Basically, we're really easy to get a hold of.
Yeah, we try.
We're also on Google, Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher, though I don't think you can leave comments there. But you can listen to us there, so it's almost equally as good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, everyone, thank you very much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was episode 182 of Haunt Weekly, talking about The Last Room. We will see you guys next time.